Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday, September 26, 46 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Bob Bedore. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. And I hope you all enjoyed your weekend. It was a very beautiful one. And today I'm bringing you a little good news and bad news. We're going to start good news. That weekend is going to continue on for the next couple of days. Today we're going to see high near 76. It's going to be beautiful, sunny, mostly clear skies overnight as we're looking down to about 49 degrees. Tomorrow, a lot of the same kind of thing. We'll actually raise up another degree to 76, maybe even 77, 78, but going to be very nice. Again, sunny skies, mostly clear skies, looking at around 50 for your low. So beautiful couple days, but then Wednesday, we're going to start to see some clouds starting to really cover in. That'll come in very late on Tuesday night, probably, but then we'll start seeing it even more so on Wednesday. By the time we get into our day, we're going to see good temperature still at 75, but once those clouds start to come in, a good chance of getting some rain, especially in the evening on Wednesday, where we're at about a 50% chance for rain on Wednesday night. Coming in, there's a drop that temperature down, back down into the mid-40s there on Wednesday night. Thursday, storm's going to stick around for a little while. We've got that chance of storm still coming in Thursday morning on through the day, and then picking up again a little bit by Thursday night, where we're going to have a high Thursday of 69, low, again, still in about that mid-40s range. Friday, slight chance of showers as it is leaving the state, but mostly in the upper elevations is where we still got a chance Friday to see some of those storms continue on. So Friday could see some in the morning before it clears out. We'll have a high Friday of 65. And then Friday night, we start to get mostly clear again, low and very low around right around 40. So we're going to be temperatures going to be dropping because of that storm making its way out. But then Sunday, we'll start to see temperatures rise back up, or Saturday, excuse me, again, under some sunny skies. That temperature will rise back up to about 70. Clear skies, low around the low 40s. Then Sunday, we're back up into the 70s as we'll see sunny skies again. So again, the days we have to watch out for: Wednesday, Thursday, really high. Wednesday evening on into Thursday, our best chances of some rain. But other than that, we're going to see some beautiful weather across pretty much all of Park City.
Okay, sounds great. Bob, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the executive director of the Park City Historic Alliance, Ginger Wick. She'll have an update from this month's HPCA board meeting. Also, just the end of Car Free Sunday and Silly Market for the season yesterday. Park City Friends of the Library author John Branch will be on the phone with us talking about his newest book, Side Country, and his visit to town as the annual luncheon author guest on October 19th. And finally, Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff with her monthly update, including news about the joint city council meeting at which the sustainable tourism plan will finally be presented. Well, Summit County Republican Party Chair Karen Balish recently sent an email to her supporters challenging the integrity of our local elections. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
Summit County GOP Chair Karen Balish wrote that she's become increasingly alarmed about the election in November, noting that voters have told her that mail-in ballots and machines won't result in a free and fair process. The email also included links to videos from the so-called Moment of Truth Summit, a two-day event held earlier this year in Springfield, Missouri for election deniers hosted by MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. According to Reuters, Lindell is currently being investigated by the FBI for identity theft and conspiring to damage voting equipment in Mesa County, Colorado. In an interview with KPCW, Balish said she didn't have proof of a fraudulent election, but when asked about the validity of the 2020 presidential election, she said she has questions.
There were huge boat rallies that just happened where 9 miles of boats get in a line and rally for Trump. And they're like, you know, 80 million votes, that Joe Biden got 80 million votes. It's just a lot to follow.
Balish and some of her party colleagues previously submitted requests to the county for the cast vote record, which is an electronic record of the date and time a ballot was cast and how it was processed. Those requests were denied because it is not public information in Utah. At the Moment of Truth Election Fraud Summit in August, Lindell urged those viewing to request cast vote records. He told CNN that he sees the records as a way to, quote, detect machine manipulation. Lindell was permanently banned by Twitter for spreading election misinformation earlier this year. He has also been sued for defamation by Dominion Voting Systems, which sells voting hardware and software. Summit County Clerk Eve Furse, who oversees local elections, said she's received dozens of requests for the cast vote record in the past 2 years. She credited mail-in voting for the county's 92% turnout in the 2020 election.
The claims about election fraud in Utah are very questionable as far as the motivation for making the claims goes, because the bottom line is the only race anybody's contending is the presidential race, and Trump won Utah. So it's not clear to me that there's a motivation that actually relates to election fraud when people are talking about it.
Furse, who is a Democrat, is facing write-in candidate and Hennifer resident Dawn Matheson Langston in the November election. In an interview, Langston said she had concerns about ballot drop boxes and suggested the need for more in-person voting locations. Utah is the only Republican-led state that allows all elections to be conducted by mail. The legislature allowed counties to adopt mail-in voting a decade ago. This year, state lawmakers considered several changes to the election process in Utah. They passed a requirement for 24-hour surveillance at ballot drop boxes and stricter voter ID rules. They did not approve a proposal that would have ended universal vote by mail. In a written statement to KPCW, Utah's Director of Elections, Ryan Cowley, said the state's elections are, quote, secure and transparent. He added that local election officials consider security their number one priority, and people with questions should meet with their county clerk. Katie Owens-Hubler is the chair of the Summit County Democratic Party.
So I think this shows how extreme some parts of the Republican Party have become. And they're not winning on the merits of their platform, so they're attacking our democratic institutions. And I have the utmost faith in our county clerk to administer a fair election.
All countywide elected positions are currently held by Democrats. Election day is Tuesday, November 8th. Utahns have until October 28th to register in order to receive a mail-in ballot. Registered voters can expect to receive a ballot in the mail roughly 3 weeks before the election. To register to vote, update registration, or see a sample ballot, people can visit vote.utah.gov. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Joining me now on the phone with an update from the Historic Park City Alliance, I have Executive Director Ginger Wicks. Good morning, Ginger.
Good morning, Leslie.
So September has been a pretty busy month. Let's start with the fact that we had the last car-free Sunday and Silly Market yesterday. It was packed.
I know.
Traffic backed up on Deer Valley Drive. Very popular. Too popular?
Yeah. You know, we went out with a bang for sure. It was very well attended. And I think to answer your question that it would vary across the board. Some people love it and some people think it's outgrown the street. So the city is doing, as you know, some extensive outreach to figure out what's going to be the best next steps for the Silly Market and car-free.
Yeah, so now is the time to have a say in the future of that. I haven't
absolutely
looked
yeah.
at the survey, but what is it that they're asking, or, you know, that you're looking for an answer to?
Well, I think they just, they're doing a great job in polling residents and businesses to try and figure out, you know, is the consensus they just want the market to leave Main Street? Are we open to modifying maybe what the market looks like, modifying the number of vendors, maybe modifying the number of Sundays, just exploring all options, really doing the due diligence so they can take those results back to council so that the decisions can be made for the future.
Okay. Again, people can find that survey online, I think at parkcityengage.org.
Correct. Yep. There's served for both the market and the arts festival. The arts festival's contract is up as well. So I encourage everybody, regardless, to get out and voice your opinion.
Yeah.
Be part of the process.
And what's the response then from merchants and with regard to the Kimball Art Festival? I mean, it's what, 3 days as opposed to 12 Sundays?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, honestly, the HPCA, we haven't done a survey specifically on that event. And I think the board is going to take some steps to try and figure out exactly what the merchants are thinking. I think our biggest some of the feedback I've heard is specifically to the Friday event and trying to figure out a way to still get deliveries in for the weekend and making sure that it still is addressing some of the locals and making sure locals are still being able to access the street on that Friday. But overall, I think the consensus for that event is it's very well received.
All right. Again, people have until October 3rd to fill that out.
Yes.
Also, Okay, I also just want to report for our listeners, those of you traveling there on eastbound I-80, you're going to find yourself in a traffic jam. We've got an accident there that's blocking the left lane. Looks like the three lanes needing to merge down into at least two, maybe one lane to get by that estimated cleanup. Probably not for another hour or so. Again, for those of you headed eastbound on I-80.
How you want to start your Monday.
Woodward, yeah. Okay. Let's see. You also have on the website a zero waste survey. What are you looking for from folks there?
So as some may be aware, the city has contracted with Momentum Recycling, and we've brought on a liaison to help coordinate all of our trash and recycling efforts on the street. And so what we're trying to do here specifically is just figure out what types of trash and waste each business is producing so that we can do a deeper dive into where we maybe need to put more recycling cans, how we can help with grease from the restaurants, just trying to help understand, you know, what's happening on the street, what's being produced on the street so that we can move the needle towards our zero waste goals. So we're doing a survey as an initial step, and then the liaison will actually be going out and trying to meet with each business to even do a deeper dive into how we can help support them, again, to move towards zero waste within the historic district.
Okay, so that survey, how long do people have to fill that out?
That survey is open until the middle of October. Actually, I don't anticipate that we'll probably close it off. If we don't get a response from businesses, then we'll reach out to try and get the answers that we need from them.
Okay, but you don't expect to have anything on that then, at least next month's report, then it doesn't sound like.
Yeah, next month's, again, it's really just for us to try and start to really understand what's being generated within the historic district, so.
Okay, sounds like Autumn Aloft was a success.
Yes.
And so Friday, just for sponsors and stuff?
Yep, they do a pre-launch for sponsors and media to try and get some good coverage for the community and for the event itself.
So that sounds like it went off last minute then, huh?
It did. You know, balloon events are tricky because we're so dependent on the weather. And sometimes that, as a spectator, that's hard because you're planning for a specific launch time and then you get a window of opportunity and you've got to go. And so, it did go off. We're thrilled to have the event actually be able to take flight because, as you know, in years past, that has not been the case.
Yeah, so Saturday morning, it was canceled. At least I got a text message that it was canceled for the Saturday launch.
Yeah, they did end up being able to get some balloons in the air on Saturday. And then, of course, the Candlestick event on Main Street was very well attended.
Okay. Now, who manages that as Misha Lawson stepping down from that role?
I know. We're so sad to have Misha stepping down, but she's going to focus on her family. And as she said in a recent meeting, she's going to attend the event with her children. She'd like to do that. But some big shoes to fill, and the association will have to look at how that event can be managed going forward and find somebody to try and fill her shoes for sure.
Okay, is that your role? Is it the chamber's role? Is it Park City's? I mean, who is it that does that?
Well, the Autumn Aloft is permitted and managed by the HPCA, so we'll have to do a deep dive into that. The board last year made it pretty clear that they really didn't want to be in the business of producing events. And so we'll have to work with everybody that's been involved in that event to figure out the best way to keep that event alive and find somebody to hopefully manage it. So to be determined.
Okay. Let's move on then to the winter or proposed winter parking rates. Are these a done deal?
No. What was presented in our last meeting was just an idea to kind of get some feedback on how folks are feeling about changing the winter parking rates. With last year, during the winter season, we, even before Vail obviously is going to be implementing parking rates for this year, we did see a significant number of day skiers taking advantage of the free parking in China Bridge. And so we anticipate with paid parking happening at the resort this year, if we don't make adjustments within the historic district, that will only get worse. And we certainly want to make sure that people coming to Main Street are able to find parking. And obviously, if we have day skiers coming to Main Street, we want to make sure that they're paying to do so. So we're trying to work with the city to figure out a good balance of how do we manage that? How do we deal with the day skiers, but also how do we make sure that it's makes sense for visiting guests coming to Main Street? And so we're still working through that process. And then obviously we have to make sure that our employees, people coming, you know, to work on Main Street, how does that affect them? And so it's, nothing has been determined, and we're just working through the process with city staff at this point.
All right. So what do you guys, what's being proposed here? Like, so between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m., we're talking for the first hour, $2. For the second hour, $3. The third hour, you would pay $25?
Yeah. So what that is, the idea of what was presented in the last meeting is eventually it would match. If you are there till 1 o'clock, you basically are going to pay $25, which is exactly what you'd pay at the resort. And then after 1 o'clock, it would drop down. The theory and what was presented in the meeting is that charging a nominal fee of 25 cents or 50 cents after 1 o'clock, then you are in the parking system. And so if you're out doing something on Main Street, you would get a reminder of, hey, your parking's about to run out, versus if it's free from one to whatever time, you may forget to go back. You may forget to go in at 3 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever time the paid parking would go into effect. And you would forget to initiate the paid parking, and then you would be deemed even more. So the city feels like, based off of what other communities are doing and what the parking vendor is suggesting, is starting with a nominal fee throughout the day. Again, nothing has been determined. These are just ideas that are being flown out there for the members to consider. In our last meeting, a lot of the members would like to see a validation system be implemented. So if you're out spending money on Main Street, then, you know, some to other parking garages in the city, like at City Creek, then you could have a validation to waive your fees. But again, nothing's been determined. These are all just conversations that we're having.
So is it that the business has to pay for that validation, or is it something that the city would absorb?
That has not been determined at all. It's just been suggested that a validation system be considered, and how that, the details around that, again, nothing's even been discussed. So,
okay. You also discussed some details on the grease spill. I think I remember when this happened. Any news there?
It was more just to let the businesses know if they do have a grease spill, how to handle it, who to call. The city is happy to help manage and help get certain spills cleaned up. And then just to remind businesses that do produce the food grease, the proper way to dispose of it, if they need help disposing of it. Again, the city's got some great resources that can assist with that. And educating staff as to what can go down the storm drains, what shouldn't be going down the storm drains. It's very, very expensive to clean up grease spills. And so we want to help the businesses avoid those very large expenses by educating their staff and helping them with the resources so we can avoid the grease spills going forward.
Yeah, so how's the grease getting into the storm water drain? That's separate than where the grease trap is, yeah?
Yeah, so, you know, spills happen, unfortunately, and if it gets dumped down, sometimes they do get dumped down the storm drains, or they spill and end up in the storm drains. And so we're just trying to support the businesses and educate the businesses on how to avoid those instances.
Okay, let's see. You've got the annual Sunrise Rotary Shotzi happening mid-October. Tickets are on sale now. This will close down Main Street. Is it something that the Alliance supports?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great fall event. And it's a fun rivalry between other ski areas. So, yeah, it's a great event. It closes the street from about 8 a.m. and they anticipate to having it back open by about 3 on that day. So encourage everybody to come out and take part in beating Breckenridge.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
The only other thing I would add is that the 10th annual Dineabout kicks off on October 1st. And there's 25 different restaurants participating in a variety of different price points. So encourage everybody to get out and support the local restaurants at a great rate.
Okay, that lasts for what, a week or two?
Till October 9th.
Okay. All right, Ginger, we'll talk to you next month. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Ginger Wicks is the Executive Director of the Historic Park City Alliance. Well, tickets to the Friends of the Park City Library for October 19th are on sale now. An opportunity to have lunch with Pulitzer Prize winning New York Times journalist John Branch. His newest book is Side Country, Tales of Death and Life from the Back Roads of Sports. John Branch joins me now on the phone. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So first, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Your day job is as a sports writer for the New York Times.
That's correct. I live in the Bay Area of California, but I've been at the New York Times since 2005, so I guess 16 or 17 years now. Doing a little bit of everything. I'm ostensibly a sports writer, but I don't cover a lot of games anymore. I do a lot of big features or a lot of investigative work. I just recently published a big story about fog for our climate desk. So I kind of bounce around the newsroom a little bit, but I am a sports writer at heart.
Yeah. So is there anything with the sports beats that the Times looks for you to do, or are you the one that's pitching the stories when you hear about something?
Well, if I'm lucky enough, I'm the one who pitches the stories, because that means I love the stories and I'm generating my own ideas and I'm, you know, fully invested in them that way. But a little bit of everything. For example, a few weeks ago, I spent a week in New York at the U.S. Open. I was assigned to Serena Williams and followed her around for as long as she was going to last at that tournament, which was close to a week. So I do some of that kind of thing. But generally, I do bigger projects. And, you know, what they're looking for from me is to do something that other people aren't really doing. So I kind of dabble in the outside areas of sports, away from the big four sports generally. Do a lot of outdoors kinds of things. Just a lot of things that we think, you know, nobody else has written the story. John, let's go see if we can go do it.
Yeah, and certainly with Serena's retirement, although she's not calling it that, so many stories about that. I mean, what is it that you try to do to make something different and stand out?
Yeah, so, you know, certainly a lot of people were pontificating about her, about her entire career, about where she stands among the greatest players. My role was really to go very narrow, which is something I typically do with a lot of stories. And that was basically to follow her around, everywhere that she went as much as I could. And so I was just trying to get a handle on what was it like for Serena to go through this final tournament of her career. as you say, maybe it's the final tournament. but yeah, so I was following her around from practice courts up to into the players' lounge, where she was in the back hallways with family and friends, and just try to write almost like a diary of her final few days.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that I guess she had to have permission to do that, or.
Well, I have a media pass, so I'm allowed to go wherever the media pass will allow me to go. But I didn't get any special permission from her. It's interesting. I did something similar on her in 2015 when she was going for the Grand Slam. She had won the first three tournaments of the year, major tournaments of the year, and came to New York. I think somewhat expecting that she would win the U.S. Open as well and win the Grand Slam, such a rare thing. And so I did that. Sort of, same story idea, where I followed her around, and I was literally in the hotel lobby and outside when she was getting into limousines and that sort of thing. Yeah. This one wasn't quite as in-depth and wasn't quite as long, but the idea was the same. It's like, where can we go publicly without any sort of permissions from her and just sort of see what it's like to be as close to her as we can get?
All right. Well, you'll be making your way to Utah for the October 19th luncheon. Again, that morning you'll be spending time with Steve Cotita's Park City High School students in the sports literature course before joining the audience there at Silver Lake. What is it that you would share with high school students?
Yeah, I love talking to high school students. I talk to a lot of high school students and college students, and it's just about storytelling. It's just about trying to find, you know, details in the stories and how to craft the stories, how to get yourself organized for a big reporting expedition. I love this craft, and I hate to call it a craft because it makes it sound more artistry than it really is, but I love what I do. I think journalism is hugely important, and so any young people who might have an interest in it, I want to help them and help them fall in love with it the same way I'm in love with it.
Well, that's wonderful that you're spending time with them then. At the luncheon then, you're going to be focused on your newest book, again, Side Country, Tales of Death and Life from the Back Roads of Sports. It's a collection of 20-plus stories or so that were these stories that were published in the Times? Because the book reads a lot different than a newspaper article to me.
Yeah, they were all published in the Times. But hopefully it's indicative of just the kinds of things that I'm doing that might be different than you might expect in a newspaper, I suppose. I hope that's the case, at least. Yeah, these are stories that I've written over about the past 10 years or so. Some of them are short. Some of them are, you know, 800 words. And some of them are big, long projects, probably 15,000 words or more. And so these 20-some stories are really the stories that stick out to me as being my favorites. And the reason they're my favorites are generally because they are the kinds of stories I love to do the best, and that is with regular people, ordinary people doing extraordinary things or finding themselves in extraordinary circumstances. None of these stories are, for the most part, are about famous people, which I recognize is a little tricky because I think a lot of people will, you know, say, well, I want to read a book about Serena Williams. I want to know more about her. These stories are about people that you've never heard of generally. But my hope, and it seems to be working out so far since the book came out this summer, people, I think, are interested in reading sort of everyday stories about really kind of interesting people doing interesting things that don't always get the limelight. And these stories are all over the gamut in terms of subject matter. You know, one of them that I'm probably best known for is Snowfall, which won a Pulitzer Prize 10 years ago, and it's about an avalanche in Washington. But there's also stories about alligator hunting and wingsuit flying, base jumping, climbing. There's also a couple of personal stories that have nothing to do with the outdoor adventure, but they're sort of, you know, internal adventures in their own way. So it's just a labor of love, the things I do, and these are kind of my greatest hits, at least how I see them.
Okay, so the book doesn't necessarily expound on the reporting you did for the Times. It's the article itself?
It's the article themselves with a foreword and then a little bit of an update, since some of these were a few years ago, and people have often asked me, whatever happened to that person, or whatever happened to those people? But yeah, it's a collection.
Yeah, the book opens, as you mentioned, it's with the Stevens Pass Avalanche there in the state of Washington. Our book reviewer, Kathy Lanikin, describing the story as, quote, an unflinching exposition and the deadly outcome, an absolute adrenaline rush. So you write that, you know, you told people that you were working about an avalanche, but you knew that wasn't quite right. So what did you know that you we're looking for.
Yeah. So I mentioned that. I believe I mentioned that in the introduction. That, you know, I was working on that story about an avalanche, and it killed three people. And so I was working in Washington, trying to interview all the people, trying to get to the scene of it. And I was doing this months later. We were really doing kind of a deep dive into what happened that day back in February, several months earlier. And I was with one of the people who was in the avalanche, involved in the avalanche, and who had helped try to dig out people. And he and I were hiking up to the scene, and we came across a ski. And this was, there was no snow around. It was in June, I believe. And he came across one of the skis of one of the people who died. And the guy I was with, Tim, just started to break down and cry. He did break down and cry. And as I write in the book, it really hit me then that this was not a story just about like an avalanche, like an inhuman thing. This was a story about people. And it was about people who happened to be caught in an avalanche. And the avalanche was just the thing that brought them together on this horrible day. And that's kind of, I think, again, indicative of the kinds of things I like to do. You know, when I write about basketball, for example, it's not really about basketball. It's really about the people who are playing basketball. You know, that's just kind of the framing of the human story. And that's the way it was with the avalanche as well.
Yeah, and that's the, you mentioned about basketball. I think that's part of your winning and losing section about the girls' basketball team in Tennessee.
Yeah, so one of my favorite projects I did was over the course of 2 years, actually, covering a team in Tennessee at a place called Carroll Academy. And it's really a home for juvenile delinquents, a day school for juvenile delinquents who have come through the court system in East Tennessee, rural Tennessee. And as such, when they are sent to this school, a very disciplined school where they have to wear a certain kind of uniforms and they are very strictly disciplined, but with a lot of love also, part of what they have to do, at least if you're a girl, is join the basketball team. And so they have a basketball team there that plays all the local public schools, some of the public schools that these kids have since been kicked out of. And some of these girls, and a lot of these girls, have never played basketball before. But there's a coach there that says, you're going to be on the basketball team. It'll teach you discipline. It'll teach you teamwork. It'll teach you how to get along with others. It'll teach you about the ups and downs of life. It'll teach you how to keep a schedule. And these girls never, ever win. In fact, when I was covering them for a couple of years, they were losing most games 92-7 or 68-12, those kinds of scores. They ended up having a 312-game losing streak. So they might have had the longest losing streak in the country of any high school sport. But again, that story was really not about basketball. It was really about getting into the homes and the lives of these girls and what they're going through that got them to that place in the first place.
Yeah. In the section titled Hiding and Seeking, this makes me laugh. The story is hunting something that can hunt you back. This focuses on a woman, Mandy Stokes, the champion alligator hunter who holds, this is true, the record for the largest alligator kill. Like, how big are we talking about?
Yeah, in Alabama, which happens to be the biggest one in the country. I forget exactly, it's 16 or 17 feet. It's massive. And when you see it, it's since been stuffed and tours the state. When you see it, it is big around. You know, it's as big as a large log. You know, I mean, it would be hard to wrap your hands around its section if you could hug it. So she said she hunted the biggest alligator. They're over 1,000 pounds in state history back in, I forget now, 2016 or so. And so we went the next year on the alligator hunt in Alabama and spent one of the weekends there. It's very controlled in terms of having to have permits and so on. There's a lottery involved, and some people spend their entire lives hoping they'll get picked for the lottery so they can go hunt an alligator. And then when that weekend comes, it is weird and crazy, and it's all done in the middle of the night because these are things I didn't know, but because the way to hunt alligators is to troll very, very slowly through the bayous and the swamps in the middle of the night, as black as possible, and you shine a bright beam right across the water, and the eyes of alligators will shine like little marbles. And that's how you spot your alligators. And then you go over, and there's a whole process for how you are allowed to take an alligator and to kill an alligator.
Yeah, so that is pretty incredible that it's, a woman who did it. So right on.
Yeah, good for her, right?
Right. And then the final segment, you've titled the girl in the number 8 jersey, and this actually happened, sounds like, pretty close to home.
Yeah, the final story there was really about the mass shooting in Las Vegas a few years ago. People will remember that at the Mandalay Bay, their hotel, where the gunman shot from high up in the Mandalay Bay across the strip to an outdoor concert. And so I was called in the middle of the night and rushed to Las Vegas to help cover that for us for the New York Times. And the first day I was there, I got a text from my wife saying, hey, this girl on our soccer team, on my daughter's soccer team, 12-year-old girl, her parents were there. And I won't give away the entire story, but they were victims of that massacre. These people from my little hometown here in California, of all the places. And so while I was in Las Vegas covering this for our global audience, my family and a lot of my friends were going through the mourning process that we've now seen so many times when these mass events happen. And so I came home that next weekend and caught the soccer game, and the little girl whose mother had been killed in Las Vegas played in the soccer game. And I still get emotional thinking about it. But that's the final story of the collection, yes.
Yeah. Again, as somebody who has written over 2,000 articles for the New York Times, it sounds like you have lots of stories to tell, and people are invited to come join you for lunch. That's happening on Wednesday, October 19th at the Silver Lake Lodge, starting at 11 a.m. Tickets are online now at parkcitylibrary.org, or they can stop by the front desk. And we look forward to welcoming you, John. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And that's author John Branch. Again, this year's author for the Park City Library Annual Author Luncheon. Well, tomorrow, the Park City Chamber Bureau will be releasing its long-awaited sustainable tourism plan. It's been a major focus for the organization this past year. In the studio to tell us more, I have the CEO of the Chamber Bureau, Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the plan's going to be released at the joint Park City Summit County Council meeting tomorrow. When and where, if the public wants to join in?
The meeting is at 9 a.m., from 9 a.m. to 11 at the Marsac Building. Both City Council and County Council will be in attendance. They'll also be streaming that live on their channel, so if people can't attend in person, they can certainly watch online.
So explain why this is important, other than it's something that, I mean, you were tasked with, the board asked you to get done.
I was. Sustainable tourism has been a buzzword for a very long time, and I knew coming into this position several years ago that it was also a priority for our city. As the city went through that 2030 visioning process, sustainable tourism was one of the key, I think there were four priorities at the time, or four pillars at the time. That pillar has now been, I think, folded into another pillar called, I think they call it authenticity and quality of life. But it is something that's really important, especially in a tourism-based economy, that we balance the needs of the businesses with the quality of life of our residents. And it's a new way to think about tourism here in Park City, and we're really excited to lay out the vision and the objectives of the plan.
So going forward, I mean, what does tourism in Summit County then look like? Different than what we see today?
I wouldn't say different. I would say managed differently, with a focus on influencing visitor behavior more meaningfully. You know, when we did the survey that was part of this process, over 2,600 people responded, and we learned a lot from that. We learned what the pinch points are for our residents. We learned what was important to our businesses. And we know what's important to our visitors, and it's really looking at tourism through that lens and thinking about how can we celebrate all of the great things that tourism offers, right? We know that we have the quality of life and the amenities and these amazing resorts here, the restaurants, the trail system. There's so much to celebrate through tourism, the tax dollars alone that it generates to be able to provide the infrastructure that we get to enjoy. But I think the hard part sometimes for organizations like ours is to also recognize the trade-offs. You know, I think in some cases, I think my job is to be the number one cheerleader for tourism and for the business community. And it's something that I've learned over the years that we have to be honest about the good and the bad of every industry. So what we're trying to do with the Sustainable Tourism Plan is to celebrate all of the good that tourism brings, but also look at how can we mitigate the potential negative impacts like traffic and congestion and overflow parking to neighborhoods in trailheads and litter on the trails and those sorts of things. How can we do a better job through our expertise and our influence to change some of those behaviors and mitigate the negative impacts.
Yeah, and I see tourism very broken into two different categories. And yesterday was a good result of that. I mean, we've got the destination tourists, right? I mean, and we see big drop off right here in front of the KPCW studios with, you know, vans full of people that come and go. Then we also see the traffic backup, you know, for folks looking for a parking spot, coming into the last silly Sunday market. Those aren't destination tourists. Those are folks coming up from the Salt Lake Valley. So when you talk about going forward with that, I mean, it sounds like the faction that we need to work on is the Salt Lake Valley.
It was a very similar conversation in the community that I came from, too. We called them day trippers. You know, day trippers typically don't spend as much money in the community as an overnight visitor. So our job, we tend to focus on the overnight visitor because they're a higher value visitor, right? They stay longer, they spend more money, they're easier to influence because they're in our community for a longer period of time. But I don't want to diminish the importance of a day tripper. I think if we were to talk to a lot of the businesses along Main Street, they would tell us that the day trip visitor is a very important visitor for them, especially during slower time periods. And you know, the restaurants probably benefit from that as well. So it's important to have a balance and to not demonize really any one type of visitor because they're all important to our economy. The mix is important, as are the locals and what the locals enjoy doing on Main Street too.
So you have hired a full-time director of sustainable tourism. What will her role be going forward?
So Morgan Mingle is our new director of sustainable tourism. I'd love to get her in maybe at our next monthly opportunity to talk about what she's excited about of the plan. Her job is going to be stewarding this plan along and helping us develop a dashboard of metrics of how we gauge success. Gauging success in some of the areas that typically chambers don't focus on. For example, you know, a Chamber of Commerce and Destination Marketing Management Organization, we typically gauge our success in terms of the economy, the sales tax collections, the TRT collections, the number of jobs, economic indicators that are pretty easy to track. It's a lot harder to track quality of life and amenities and work that we're doing with the Green Business Program. So she'll be working on developing a set of metrics in the quality of life arena, as well as the environment, to gauge just how successful are we. And I think it's really important that this plan is really meant to be a community-wide plan. That's why we're presenting to the city and the county councils tomorrow. Because we want their buy-in. Unfortunately, they're not able to take action at this work session. So subsequently at their next meetings, they'll have the opportunity to sign on to a resolution of support and get the whole team, their teams, their agencies, and the entire community behind these objectives.
All right, so the Chamber Bureau's Board of Directors has approved the plan. It's finalized in that sense.
Yep.
And then you'll be making these presentations in the next couple of months to different community groups? Is that the plan?
We would welcome the opportunity to speak to the community groups who might want us to come and talk about what we're trying to accomplish and to share the vision. You know, the vision of the plan is all about a stewardship mindset, a sense of community, looking at this balanced visitation, and really celebrating our history, our culture, our arts, in addition to the great outdoor recreation that we already celebrate and enjoy.
All right. People can see the plan themselves by going to visitparkcity.com/sustainabletourismplan.
Yep, it's online.
All right, let's move on just to occupancy. We have heard all summer that the occupancy numbers are down, but in terms of tax collection through the transient room tax, rates are up, so budgets should not be affected.
You know, we are seeing a little bit of leveling off. We saw July and August level off a little bit. It's the first time that we saw some decreases in occupancy in July and August. And that's despite us trying. You know, we are marketing. In fact, we spent just a little bit of money, more money this summer than we did last summer. And we still saw July down in occupancy about 19%. And August was down just about 10%. We are also starting to see that hit at least the TRT collections. July Summit County TRT collections were down 17%, and in August they were down 7%. The good news is that PACE, looking forward, September and October, is outperforming PACE, where we were this time last year for September and October. So that's looking pretty good. We're looking a little bit forward into December, January, February now, and we're just seeing a mixed bag in terms of PACE. November and December seem a little soft right now, but January PACE is up 7%. And I'm guessing that's due to some of the great announcements that Sundance made going in person again, which we're really excited about. I have a feeling November and December will catch up, but that booking window, I think, is just a little shorter than normal.
Yeah, and in terms of Christmas, you know, we've got it, I think, on a Sunday. How does that impact travel, if at all?
I'm going to have to look back and see when Christmas falls on a Sunday, how that impacts travel stays. I don't have enough history, Leslie, to be able to answer that well.
Okay. So what else have you got going on?
Oh, we have some great events coming up. We have our coffee chat on October 4th from 9:30 to 10:30. That's going to be at the Kimball Junction Visitor Center. We treat the folks to coffee. Locals are welcome to come and learn about the Sustainable Tourism Plan or ask any questions or topics that they want to talk about. We usually have a pretty good turnout, and it's very informal. It's just comfortable and easy and an opportunity to get to know other folks in the community. We also have our Business After Hours Mixer. That's going to be October 19th. This is going to be a fun one. It's from 5 to 7 at the Wasatch Brew Pub.
Okay, and what are you going to be focusing on that?
This is just an opportunity to network and get to know each other. It's really informal. Just an opportunity to get to know fellow business community. So we hope that lots of folks come.
Okay. And then what kind of turnout have you gotten for your business university?
Really great turnout, about 30 to 40 people for both of those first two sessions that we had. I don't have the topic for the October 5th session yet, but that's posted on our website. If you go to parkcitychamber.com and click on Chamber Events, you can see the whole curriculum listed there. But definitely record numbers. You know, we used to have more of an ad hoc approach to these themes. It would be about marketing. It would be about social media. It would be about public relations. And now I think our businesses are really interested in deepening their knowledge and their through a standard curriculum.
Okay. And then you've got the Tourism Fall Forum happening November 1st.
We do. That's going to be a luncheon event. It's going to be held at the Stein Erickson Lodge. We'll have a panel of our resort managers talking about what they're excited about, what we can look forward to for the upcoming season. And then our keynote speaker is going to be Ted Ligety. So we're really excited to have Ted be there with us and talk about what it's like to have a business in Park City. You know, he did have a business in Park City for some time. So he has a unique perspective of being an Olympian and also a business owner.
Okay. Hey, Jennifer, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Jennifer Wesselhoff is the CEO of the Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau.